President Jacob Zuma has lashed out at the DA's Musi Mamani for alleging that he has had a hand in his son Duduzani's success as a business person. Over to you, Madam Speaker. That's another headline coming out of News 24, Judge Mogoeng. And with that, I say, Howard Sexton, tell us what it was like at the Constitutional Court earlier today.
Well, you know, going to the court is always an amazing experience. And if you haven't been, you really should go. So first of all, the building is beautiful, designed by LP Sachs.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the thing that makes it so unique is the fact that we've taken old South African history and we've built it into the new court.
I absolutely love that, that it's built in one of the most vile places of our history.
In the middle of a prison. What was the Hillbar prison, the women's jail, the number 4 prison, and they took the bricks from the prison and they used it to create the wall of the inside of the court.
Amazing.
And of course you've got cow skins and the whole place. It's not an austere place as you would expect.
From
it's
a court.
It's a people's court.
Which is really what the Constitutional Court is, isn't it?
And that's what one of the great gifts that LB Sachs gave to the people, an accessible Constitutional Court.
Absolutely.
And so it's always a little intimidating to walk into the court. There you've got 11 judges dressed in their green robes, the most senior judges in the country. And, of course, it's very formal. Their clerks are in black gowns and with little white
books. Are you allowed access into the court?
You are indeed. And in fact, they welcome members of the public to go in and actually watch court proceedings.
Is there a large gallery?
It could probably seat about 120 people or so.
Right, so you've got to get there early if you really want. So on a day like today, I'd imagine it was packed.
Absolutely packed. And people came in, and a member of our community, who's clerk to the Chief Justice, called the roll.
Mm-hmm.
And in walk the 11 judges, and they sit down, and then Judge Mogoeng takes out what was a very lengthy, he didn't give the judgment.
Mm-hmm.
He actually just gave the heads,
the
of,
heads
the
of the judgment. The heads, right.
Which took him about an hour.
Yes.
So you can understand the judgment
I
itself.
I live streamed some of it, but it was quite extensive.
It was very extensive, but the judgment itself is much more extensive.
Right.
And the first thing he did was he said, "I'm giving this judgment. I've written it, but it is a unanimous judgment of the entire court."
Okay.
Now, for those of us who actually sat in on the hearings, there were quite a bit of differences in approach between the various judges and how far the court could actually go. And you could actually pick that up from the different judges and the questioning of the legal counsel during the actual argument. But it was a unanimous decision. And it really was quite an interesting and momentous decision. So
before we get to the decision, I'm talking to Howard Sexton. He was at the Constitutional Court today. He is a qualified lawyer. He's been involved in politics basically pre-Mandela even, really.
Oh, yes. Way, way pre-Mandela.
And then involved with Mandela. Howard has a tremendous history in the struggle, in being part of the struggle, and certainly has kept his involvement going throughout his career. He was at the Constitutional Court today, and I've invited him in to have a conversation just to get a sense of not only the judgment but also of what went on. If you have any questions, 34519 or 0621482374. Questions or comments, I'd love to hear from you. I just want to set the scene a little bit more. You've got the different political parties, obviously all of whom had a very real and significant interest in being there. How does it look? Are they sitting in separate areas? Do you see the ANC all in one area, the DA in another? Were there people in red? How did it look?
Yeah, so in fact, it was very interesting. During the original hearing, you had Musi Maimane sitting there, and you had Julius Malema sitting there, and you had Ndlozi from the EFF. You really had the entire leadership of political leadership, with probably the exception of the ANC, sitting and listening to the actual hearing when it took place. Today, it was almost a step down. So you had General Bantu Holomisa, whose case it is. It was his party, the UDM,
who brought the case.
And you had Musiwa Lekota, Lekota, who's obviously integrally involved as well. And he's sitting there. And the two of them are well-dressed and in suits. And then come their supporters. And they're in T-shirts. And they're people in red berets and red T-shirts. And people in Kusatu shirts. And people in EFF shirts. And, you know, that's part of the miracle that is South Africa. We've gone away from this colonial sitting where the judges wore wigs or shaitels, as we like to call them. And you know, someone in a T-shirt can walk into the Constitutional Court and sit there and feel equally as home as someone in a suit and tie.
But yet decorum in the chamber?
Decorum in the chamber until the judgment, the actual ruling is given, and the crowd then burst into applause and cheers.
Amazing. Amazing. Absolutely wonderful.
And you know, the funny thing was, apparently I was on television, and so I kept on getting some of these WhatsApps that saying, who's the guy in the kippah sitting next to you? And I got lots of those throughout the thing. So it was actually Dovi Brom, if anyone wants to know, whose girlfriend works at the court. And people, it was primarily people involved in politics who were there. It was politicians and their supporters and a huge media contingent. There were probably 20 television crews outside, satellite dishes on all of these trucks pointed upwards.
Was there international interest?
Oh, yes.
So it wasn't just local?
Correct. But, you know, there were probably maybe 40 or 50 photographers.
Incredible.
Just waiting. And then as you walk out of the court, there's this enormous scuffle as everyone's trying to get an interview with one of the political leaders
who's walked out of the court. Yeah.
But, you know, it's a jovial experience. It really is. It's a people's court.
Right.
And that's part of what Chief Justice Mogoeng Mogoeng actually said. And he spoke about the role of the court as a people's court, the role of parliament as a people's parliament.
So that was so interesting because I was listening to it, as I say, I was live streaming it. And he was so accessible. I find his accessibility to be tremendous. You could listen to it, understand it. Almost, there was almost emotion in an unemotional judgment, because I don't think, and of course not, that the decision isn't taken emotionally. It took them a long time to come to this decision, and it was a unanimous one. But he really... You know, there's a Jewish word called musar, and I'm trying to think what the translation of musar is. Almost, I don't know, guidance, ethics. You really felt as though there was real wisdom coming through his judgment. Was it the same there?
Oh, yes. And, you know, he sits in the center and he's flanked on the one side by Deputy Chief Justice Zondo and the other side by Edwin Cameron. Now, I don't know if you know Edwin.
He was
probably lectured
well,
you
he
at
lectured.
University.
He was a human rights – he lectured us in human rights.
And he is maybe one of the greatest intellects that
Absolutely.
The country has
Absolutely
ever produced.
Absolutely wonderful, yeah.
And, you know, when Edwin Cameron speaks, you need a dictionary. When Mogoeng Mogoeng speaks, he speaks to the people.
Well, that's exactly
and,
what I felt.
And given
incredible.
The fact that this was a unanimous judgment and they've clearly all had hands in the writing of the judgment and the crafting of it. It was really crafted as a people's judgment. And one of the things that really stood out for me, he spoke about the role of members of parliament. And he said, the constitution says you must be loyal to the people and to the constitution of South Africa, not loyal to your party.
Which is a very big smack to the ANC, considering this has been one of the main criticisms of the Jacob Zuma government, is that their loyalty was first and foremost, it has been to the party and not to the people.
In fact, quite specifically, he says, nowhere in the constitution will you find that a member of parliament should have an allegiance to a party. The allegiance is to the constitution and to the people of the republic.
Was that also a telling off to Baleka Mbete, who has been accused of, even as Speaker of the House, being more partisan to her ANC party?
Well, you know, he dealt with that as part of the judgment, where he said the Speaker comes from a particular party, and you have to recognize that her position is because of the party.
Okay.
And
I think
therefore,
that's a fair comment.
And therefore, you have to acknowledge the fact that when a speaker gives a ruling, she comes from that position and her position is dependent on the goodwill of the party having decided that she should be there.
So he's suggesting there's an inherent bias.
He's suggesting there's an inherent bias in the entire way. And he even talks about the bias of your position in parliament, even on a list, is because a party has put you there. So he's really hinting all along that, for example, intimidation by your own party to vote in a particular way actually exists. He's underpinning some of the potential reasons she would use should she wish to declare that, in fact, there should be a secret ballot in Parliament.
So I did get that as well. Is I almost got the sense that he was doing a number of things. Is that, A, he was giving her the tools and maybe nudging her towards a secret ballot. And number two, and this is I need you to clarify this. I got the sense that he was saying, and don't take this decision lightly, because you can come back here and you can be held accountable for that.
Well, you know, in the actual arguments before the court. Mm-hmm. So what was her position when she came in? Both she and the president said, I do not have the power as Speaker of Parliament to declare a secret ballot.
Right.
And she said, I'm not opposed to a secret ballot.
Yes, which is interesting. She put that on record.
She put it on mm-hmm. record, put it under affidavit. Mm-hmm. She said, I'm not opposed to it, but I do not have the powers in order to do it. It would be unconstitutional of me to do it.
Right.
And one of the things that the court said is the speaker was mistaken. That was the fundamental nub of her argument. And in the initial arguments, her counsel and counsel for the president actually conceded the point. So in the actual arguments, we knew already that the court was going to rule against her, that she did have the power, because they conceded those points. And that's why she got the costs order against her, and the president also got a costs order against
him. Interesting.
Because they were wrong on the law.
But how could they then continue and pursue it if that, because that was really the only basis for the discussion, surely?
Well, you know, that was the point that the Constitutional Court was asked. The first question they raised, they said, you shouldn't have come to the Constitutional Court. You should have gone to the High Court, and the High Court could have sent it to the Appellate Division, and the Appellate Division could have. And the UDM said, no, we're going straight to the Constitutional Court. And so the first question the court had to deal with was this concept of direct access, going directly to the court.
Right.
And the court said, absolutely fine. We are willing to hear this case. It's an issue of national importance, and we are willing. It is within our jurisdiction, and we're able to give an answer to this. So that was the first thing that she lost on, and she had argued that the court didn't have jurisdiction. It should have gone through a process. And the second point she argued was her own powers. She says, I do not have the power to declare a secret ballot. And the court says, well, you are mistaken.
You do.
You very well do. And then it says, but you have to take into account. So this isn't a blanket rule. You can't say that every vote in Parliament can be secret. The circumstances under which a vote can be declared secret depends on the circumstances. And he says, for example, there could be bribery. There could be intimidation. And in those circumstances, when those things exist, you may well want to declare the vote secret so people don't know. He said, but there are other instances where there could be no justifiable reason to have the vote secret at all. And you should, in those instances, you should favor openness and transparency.
So he really was. So the sense that I got was that he really was talking to these circumstances, because we know there's intimidation. We've seen Zuma throwing his weight around. We've seen him intimidating people. We know that there's certainly allegations of bribery. We, you know, these things exist. So the sense that I got, again, is that he was pushing her towards allowing or making the decision to allow a secret ballot.
So in the original argument of the matter, at least two of the counsel stood up and said, you can declare that the speaker has the discretion on whether a vote would be secret or not.
Right.
But you really should tell her that in these circumstances, there is only one potential right answer. And Judge Mokeng during the argument says, but then she has no discretion at all. And in fact, Jeff Budlander, who argued the case, and this was the nub of his argument, he said, you know, it's a notional discretion, because normally she would have a discretion.
Right.
But in this very instance, there's such an overwhelming preponderance of factors in favor of a secret ballot that she, in essence, has no ability to rule the other way. Now, the court said, we will not go that far. That would be overreaching of our mandate, because the speaker has never said that she will not rule in favor of a secret ballot. She's in fact gone on record under oath and said she has nothing against a secret ballot at all.
Do you think there's any possibility now that with any form of credibility, she can say, well, I'm still ruling against a secret ballot?
She can. So we walk out of the court and General Bantu Holomisa who brought the case. Yeah. I walk up to him and the general and I go way back. I took him and Madiba to Brussels in 1992 and we've been friendly ever since. And I go up to him, he hugs me and I said, General, mazel tov, fantastic. I'll see you back in a few weeks when you challenge the Speaker's decision. And in essence, I think there may be a real possibility. So what did the court do? They kicked it back to the Speaker. They said,
but with guidelines.
With guidelines and guidance.
And almost suggestions.
Absolutely. But they said, the decision is yours. And until you've made a decision, we will not make that decision for you.
Right.
So make your decision carefully because we're watching.
Right, right.
But the reality is she has two choices. Choice number one, she can say, you know, I agree with the secret ballot. Mm-hmm. No problem. Choice number two is, I'm sorry, it's not going to happen, in which case all the political parties are going to take her back to court.
When does she have to rule now?
Do
we know the process?
So it's within her discretion, but she needs to act within a reasonable time.
Okay.
So I think we need to give her 2, 3, 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. She will make a decision. And then it will be up to the political parties based on that decision of which they, if they wish to challenge their decision or not. Now, what is really interesting, the DA doesn't believe in a secret ballot.
Yes, I've had this conversation with a member of parliament, and the comment was that we want to see, the people deserve to see who is voting for and against the president.
So, you know, that's an issue of openness and transparency. They are your public representatives.
I think there's a naivety in that.
So what happened in Mogale City, in fact, there was a secret ballot to remove the DA mayor. And in fact, the DA lost the ballot. The mayor was removed. The DA were furious.
Isn't
about the secret ballot. And
well, that's the beauty of democracy, isn't
and
it?
And took the city councillors of Mogale City and made them undergo lie detector tests.
What?
Yep.
What do you mean?
Seriously, they were so determined.
Is that within
because
their
at least one member of the DA voted with the opposition in order to remove the DA mayor of Mogale City. And the DA subjected them to lie detector tests. So the DA is on a very, very slippery slope and on a tightrope here. But you know something? Their view is in not now and not removing Jacob Zuma from office. Their view is on the elections in 2019.
Well, it serves them, and they, I think they're fairly open about it. Again, on this very show, Darren Bergman has said there's two different issues at play. One is for South Africa, Jacob Zuma should go today or yesterday, but in fact for the DA it serves us for him to hang around longer, because the longer he hangs around, the more he erodes an ANC supporter base.
Exactly, the more corruption that we found, the more Gupta emails that come out, the longer that he remains as a galvanizing force for the opposition, it serves the opposition to keep him.
Coming up in the next 20 minutes, we've invited Howard Saxton to stay, because I don't think you can really talk about the Constitution and what's going on in this country without a little bit of alcohol in your hand. Howard, I don't know if you agree with that or not. It certainly makes life easier, doesn't it?
I disagree. You said a little bit of alcohol. You need a lot of alcohol.
Absolutely right. Someone was saying, I thought the song would never end. Please send a tequila cocktail from Liquid Chefs. All right. Well, there we go. People generally quite excited about it's funny, hey? You know, we have a whole constitutional conversation and our listeners just don't participate. You mention alcohol and the SMS line starts going. Quite incredible.
Well, that's how we deal with our day-to-day situations.
Yeah. Now, just before we do move on to talk about Liquid Chefs, because there are some amazing cocktails being prepared. Gosh, is that cinnamon?
It's fresh cinnamon, a vanilla foam, and we're going to be heating that up
to create
a marshmallow consistency. But we'll take you through
that. All right. Yeah, we're going to talk about that in just a moment. Howard, the fact that we had the public protector attacking the Reserve Bank yesterday and in fact, asking the Constitution, they're asking for a change in the constitutional in the Constitution, did that impact, do you think, on the gravitas of today's judgment?
You know, I think probably not, because the judgment has been written over a period of the last 6 weeks or so, and I'm sure it was finalized long before the public protector actually made her pronouncements. But, you know, the thing that I don't understand about the public protector, all of us actually realize one thing. We realize that the Constitution is are the rules of the game. It's the playing field upon which we actually all play. And all of us have to play by those rules. Mm-hmm. What she's now gone and said is you need to change the rules because she thinks so. It makes no logical sense at all. She can go and say this legislation doesn't fit into the rules prescribed by the Constitution. But she's gone and said the Constitution doesn't fit into the rules that I think are applicable. That makes no sense at all. When this gets to the Constitutional Court, and it will inevitably do that, the court will kick her to touch. Without any doubt, they will say right, you have misunderstood your own powers and your own role right. as public protector.
In truth, this is something that we've been talking about here throughout the week. I'm concerned, and I wrote an article for News 24 earlier this week, that in fact it's a trap because it's almost a way, if she loses, which she will do, it might well be the way to limit the public protector's power, which serves the Zuma-Gupta camp. In fact, I was interviewed last night as well on another radio station. They'd read the article, and I'd put this theory forward. And it's quite worrying in my view.
I'm busy reading a book at the moment called The New Tsar. It's the biography of Vladimir Putin.
Ooh.
And it deals quite extensively with the issue that he comes out of an intelligence background, and the art of deflection is one of the key elements in intelligence. And here you have an intelligence operative, because mm-hmm. our current public protector is a former intelligence operative, as is our current president.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this was just
thing.
The whole thing was deliberately done to detract.
Did you write my article?
I haven't read your article. Where can I read your article, Howard? And which radio station should I be listening to hear your views?
No, you don't live in Cape Town, so you can't listen to that one. There is a telephone system between the two provinces still, so I was able to talk on that radio station last night. But with that, I'm going to deflect and talk about alcohol.